Do I need to turn down my volume?
Yeah.
Recording in progress.
Holy cow. I should drink water
to the minutes, and I failed to get what the total for you, so I apologize. Okay. I still need to do that.
Great.
Do you want to just add to me then before you vote on it, or bring it back to the next meeting?
I think that if you can reflect that in there, fine.
Okay.
Okay, is there anything else that anybody has concerning the meeting? So I'm assuming we can go ahead and there's nothing in the chat. Okay. So I'm assuming we can go ahead and vote with the changes and amendments that we requested. So those all in favor of the September amendment, please verify by aye.
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 Any opposed? Say no. Great, the minutes passed. Thank you.
Thanks.
So we're just going to kind of move into our agenda really quick. And so Rebecca has kind of the next two, so we'll just let you do what you do and
okay,
just move on.
All right.
Thank you.
Just going to adjust the camera. Oh my goodness. I'm so sorry for those watching. As we move the camera around, we are going to figure out this hybrid model better. So I do have a couple of things that I wanted to provide for a director's update. The first, I just wanted to give you an update on the Office of Child Care. We have some staffing changes and some vacancies that we are filling. So to let you know, Lori Burrell is a recent addition to our staff. She is an out-of-school time program specialist. And so I don't know if you guys have had a chance to see her, if she's come out. I know she's been out in programs and doing some training, so that is a new member of our team. We are currently in the process of hiring a senior business analyst that we've been recruiting for to help with working with our Care About Child Care system and really all of the technology systems that we use within our office. We are also hiring some new staff to help with assist with our stabilization grants. And we'll talk about those stabilization grants a little bit later, but we have hired five individuals to start to help review the eligibility of applications and to assist programs in applying for those funds. We do have, I left this off of the slideshow, I apologize. We also have an open recruitment right now for after school program specialist. So we are adding some new additional members to our team. We've had some vacancies and also increasing some of our staff to help with our COVID implementation. Any questions about our staffing update? All right. The next thing I wanted to talk to you about is just an update on the membership, advisory membership. Last time we had indicated that we had several vacancies or terms that have come due. And so we had solicited applications and resumes for those interested in participating. And we've received some of those. We're going through we're reviewing those right now, and we will be working on getting those approved. Some of the resumes are individuals that are nominated by organizations. Others are just members that want to participate, but they all are approved by our executive director's office. And so we will work on getting those approvals in place for next time. But we do have a couple of positions that we haven't received any interest for yet. So I would ask this advisory group to spread the word among your networks or to let us know of individuals that might be interested. We do have a vacancy, and we saw some, we haven't received any interest or resumes for a corporate community representation, so someone from the business community, and then also a parent who would represent households that receive a subsidy. We would love to have a parent voice and parent involvement in this group, and so if you guys know of a parent that may be interested in participating, becoming engaged in this forum, then please let them, you can give them my contact information and we can talk through what that means and how to connect. So those are additional vacancies that we have yet to fill. Any questions about our membership? All right, I don't see any comments. Rhonda, if you're okay, I'll just go to the next agenda item. On a roll. Group had asked for an update around our COVID relief funding, some of the budget, some of our projects, when we meet, and so this is become a standard agenda item. a standing, not standard, a standing agenda item. So I did want to just provide information. If you're new to this meeting, I did want to just spend a couple of seconds to talk about what our funding amounts are and where we are at. The figures that are presented for the slideshow, they have not changed since last time we met, and I can talk about that in a minute. But we, through our office, we received four different funding streams related to COVID relief. And you can see here how they are divided. We have our CARES funding, the CRSA, ARPA stabilization, and we'll talk about how those funding will be used in the next agenda item, and then ARPA discretionary funds. You can see the second row is the amount of funding that we received, and it's totaled at the end. Then you can, the next row is our planned funding. This is funding that we have put into contracts, that we have identified a purpose and a use for those funds, and then what the remaining balance is by each funding stream. You can see here at the end, we have just under $200 million that we have not identified a purpose for. Before I tell you, that leads into the next agenda item, but I just want to ask if anyone had a question about the budget and these numbers. I mentioned before that this is the same figures that were from last month. We haven't engaged in any new contracts or changed contracts. We've been trying to implement everything that we and execute those contracts currently. And so that's why this funding hasn't changed yet.
So, maybe said this, does the plan funding include the stabilization grants?
Yes.
Okay, so you still have some decisions to make about some of this, or do you feel like you...
Yeah, there's definitely some decisions to be made about some of this, and I'm going to ask for your help here in a minute. But yeah, your question about the stabilization grant, the column about the ARPA stabilization grant, how much was awarded and how much is planned. So even though those haven't been opened and we aren't paying out stabilization payments yet, we know that that funding is going to be used for that purpose. So that's why it has zero for the remaining total, because we've identified the use of that. Great question. Any other questions about the funding? All right. So I mentioned that we have just under $200 million that has yet to be identified on how to use. I wanted to, in relation to some legislative initiatives, to let you know that we have made presentations and we have shared this information with the executive branch, with our legislative branch, to let individuals know that there are some available funds that could still be used to support initiatives that would meet the purpose of these COVID relief funding. And so over the Legislative Interim Committee, it's the Economic Development and Workforce Services Interim Committee, over the summer and in their last several meetings, we've been able to present about the COVID relief funds, what we've used those funds or anticipate using them for. And we've let the legislative committee know that there are some additional funds that we could support other initiatives. This committee has been working, members of the committee have been working over the summer to talk to stakeholders, many of you may have been part of those discussions, about what some of the needs are and the gaps that are currently a barrier right now, and that could be used to help stabilize the child care industry. And so they've been able to present a list of possible solutions, possible strategies that they could use legislation to help solve and help to meet and to bridge those gaps. We had the opportunity, our office, to look at the list of suggestions, and some of the items that were suggested were things that we could use this funding for without legislation, that we could expand current programs that we've already put some COVID funding towards, or we could create some new programs more easily within our programs. And so this is, we were able to present last in our October meeting about the list of what we could do with our funding. And you can see here some of the current programs we feel that we can expand easily for child care startup grants, with the TEACH scholarships, providing training for high school students, waiving licensing and the background check fees, And then an employer and childcare pilot, being able to work with the employer community to connect them with childcare options and support so they can support their employees. We feel like we have some contracts in place for that could easily address some of these strategies. And by expanding the contract eligibility requirements, or extending the contract time limit, or adding funds to current contracts, that we would be able to address some of these programs. I did want to provide an example. For instance, with the training for the high school students, it is a desire to try to engage new individuals that may have an interest working in early education to provide opportunities for them to get exposure and to really help with some of our workforce shortages. And so we have some training and scholarships available for individuals that are working in childcare programs and early education programs. So one of the things that we could consider doing is expanding that eligibility to include high school students that are participating in child development courses, that they would also provide access to some of the scholarships that we do to help offset some of those costs. So those are the types of things that now my team will be able to go through and look and see and work with these contract providers about how to expand that eligibility. I'm curious from this group what you think about this. Anyone have some interest that they want my team to connect with my team, some ideas around some of these strategies on expanding our current program?
I think that that's the high school students. I think that'd be good to be able to get the
That's great feedback. I'm not sure, because of the room and the microphone, if you heard, so I'll try to summarize the comment. It was from Monica Gailey, correct? So she said with the training for the high school students is we look at that eligibility to ensure that there is a connection for them being tied to working in the child care ministry so that connection really helps that they're working within a program to help with some of those workforce issues while providing that training for them as they're learning.
Great.
I would be happy to work with your staff on any of these, specifically the startup grants and the employer child care pilot. I know if the bill passes, then if her bill passes, then she wants to tie that employer child care pilot directly to currently licensed providers, so it's her employer, which I think is a great idea. We'd be happy to help provide guidance on that.
Okay, great, thank you.
I think that the other comment, the startup grants, I think they're going to have to be more than like $1,500. That really doesn't cover a ton when you're starting out.
Yeah. What is the magic number? What is the...
It depends on the size of the program.
Yeah.
It really does.
Startup, are you looking at startup ground up? Are you looking at startup taking over a facility that was currently a facility?
Family home versus center.
Yep. It's very different time.
Yeah. I don't know if you guys were able to hear the comments. We tried to position the room so the microphone's a little more central. So I won't repeat those ones unless we get comments that we need to. Thank you for that feedback on making sure that those child care startup grants are high enough value to be able to make that impact. Really, the desire is to help increase our capacity and to help new programs come along so we have opportunity for to increase our capacity and for children to be able to access.
And one idea I'd like to resurrect, if it's appropriate at this point, would be looking at a shared services alliance. We looked at that prior to COVID, started getting deep into it. COVID kind of derailed it, but I think now that we're in the stabilization period, a shared service alliance would help, existing programs and even new programs to, kind of take some of that administrative stress off of people. I think there's a lot that could be done there.
Definitely opportunities.
Yeah, thank you for that. So engaging that, I'm going to come back to that in just a little bit about new opportunities that maybe aren't on this list, so thank you. No, you're totally fine. In addition to expanding the current program or current programs, one of the strategies that was suggested during the interim committee is not something that we currently do, but we have pieces of it, and it would be to create a new program around childcare apprenticeships. And so we have some training components. We have some ways that we have within our Department of Workforce Services a whole apprenticeship office, and so we have the connections to that that infrastructure on how to build that. And so we suggested back to the committee that would be something we thought we could take on a little bit easier because we have some connections there. And so this is the list that the Office of Child Care is committed to starting with. And then there were some additional items that either weren't within the purview of our office or they couldn't be supported with our specific funding. And so the interim committee will look at those suggestions and determine what might make sense to be included in a bill to run through legislation. So if you're interested, they meet next on November 17th, and so you can get more information that way. Any other questions or comments about this piece, and then I'll go to where Johnny was going to. Anna, so it looks like there was a comment from Anna that said, could this money be used to provide loan forgiveness for working child care professionals who have student loans incurred from getting degrees in this field? You know, that was one of the questions that came up, and when we looked at it and worked with our fiscal team, we really can't use, when you look at the loan, it's for a debt that was accrued prior to, and so we wouldn't be able to use the funds for that purpose. But through our scholarships, we feel like we're providing some support to current training programs, the people that are engaged in training now, that can help offset that as we weren't able to pay for the loan forgiveness. So, I don't know, Anna, if you have, thanks. So, with this, part of these funds to expand these current programs to create this new will utilize some of that $200 million. But there is some additional opportunity to determine what gaps continue out there and what might be some initiatives that we could support. And so I would, Johnny, thank you for your information about shared services. I would like to ask this group, how would be the best way, or what would you guys like to see happen to be able to provide input and to strategize around how to use some of that additional funding? As you think, I just want, if you weren't part, earlier this spring we had individuals come together and we were able to identify possible uses of funding, prioritize that, and we started to go down that list. But I wanted to involve, it was a group that involved some of this advisory council, but not everyone. And so I wanted to really use this advisory council. Is part of our statute is to help for you guys to provide advice and counsel for the office on how to utilize some of our funding. So I wanted to ask this group how we might want to organize our efforts for identifying how to use the funds, the additional funds that have not been obligated.
Well, one idea would be to take, you know, some of the work that was done by that group during the spring, share it with the advisory committee, and I think, you know, folks might find things on there that they would like to support or might help to kind of percolate ideas that they might have.
There was, prior to COVID.
And as pointed out up here, sorry, but you want to eliminate anything that... that you guys have already looked at that won't work.
Yeah.
And prior to COVID, we came into this meeting, we broke out into groups and included anyone that was here. So maybe that might be a good idea.
Go ahead.
Using this meeting to do a breakout where...
like a working meeting?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yep. And use everyone else.
If you have those groups broken out, then you're essentially creating subcommittees that could collaborate even outside of, you know, our regularly scheduled meetings.
Mm-hmm.
Do a little bit of homework together and bring some bring something back to the full meeting.
I think that was pretty effective when we did it last time.
Great, thank you. I want to go, sorry, for those of you guys, I like have to turn. I want to come and see what's happened in the chat. And Tina, I see your hand raised, so let me work through the chat and then to you, Tina, if that's okay. So it looks like, want to comment, it would be nice for people at the meeting to say their name before they speak so people on Zoom know who's speaking. We will do that. Everyone, please state your name before. I'm Rebecca Banner. I would suggest a formal stakeholder group that is meeting regularly with a clear timeline and transparent process for making and responding the recommendation. So we don't make suggestions that have already been considered and dismissed by OCC. Some agree. I would want care about child care. Sorry, go back up.
Sorry.
Okay. I would want care about child care at any meeting like this. Agree page. We would need to know what they're already doing in each region. It would be nice if we could use some money to help pay for insurance or supplemental clinic programs such as Dallas Care. I'm not familiar with that. Employees need benefits that are unaffordable to centers. Right.
That last comment
is from Deb Tilly. Okay. And then, Tina, you've had your hand raised. Do you want to, do you have the ability to unmute yourself?
Hi, I'm Tina Purcell. I'm with the Utah Parent Center, and we serve families of children with disabilities. I have some thoughts on this extra piece that, you know, that we're looking at. Or extra funding, possibly, and then some. Just a couple other pieces I wanted to throw in there. Children with special health care needs generally have a harder time finding child care, depending on the child, their behavior, et cetera. I know that's a huge task for an actual child care provider themselves. As far as a consultant, what I do daily is I sit on the phone and take calls from parents. We have had, of course, through COVID, a big piece of we can't find child care for our child with cerebral palsy or our child with autism or whatever. And also, I used to give out care about child care. I still do as a resource, but we don't have that piece on there anymore, which was really, just for the disability community, a real bummer because it was the one thing we had out there that would give us a little bit of maybe this person, you know, could help you if they've marked that they have experience with this or that. With that being said, I would love for our group to have some thoughts around our disability community. And, my thoughts are, could we have incentives for child care providers? Could we have, all kids are kids, and I think that's where we wanted to take care about child care. I wasn't in the group when that all changed. But in reality, I'm going to say this as a parent of a child with multiple disabilities, including autism, they're not the same. And I think all child care providers know that. I'm being very frank because the calls I will get is my kid got kicked out of child care. And I'm sure it's after so many tries of helping them, they were released from child care because they were, a risk to the other kids and themselves or something. But maybe there could be some kind of thoughts on if there were children with special health care needs in a program that there was some extra funding to hire extra help. Or, I don't know. I really don't know. I just know that it is one of the biggest phone calls we get at the Utah Parent Center. And they're like, we cannot find child care. We're being denied by this one. We're being denied. They won't take kids with autism. They won't take kids with, a feeding tube. They won't take kids. And so that's where we're getting stuck is, I am so sorry. I'm going to give you this Care About Child Care resource, and you're going to need to cold call every one of them in your area to see, because we don't have any other... We don't have any other way to look at it, So, anyway, those are my thoughts. It's just been a big issue. It's going to still continue to always be a big issue, but I would love for this committee to really take a look at it.
Great. Thanks, Tina. I appreciate that. I think we have one more comment fully agree, Tina. Special incentives for folks who work with special needs kids make a ton of sense.
Great.
Thank you. All right, we will. I will take this and formulate a plan, and thank you for your feedback. We have the next agenda item is actually around COVID. We had asked for the Care About Child Care agencies. If you remember, some of our funding went to each Care About Child Care industry to develop and implement some local programs. And so it's different, and we wanted a report on what those local initiatives were and how they were working. And so we have Western Region 5 County, Crystal. Oh, sorry, who's? I'm sorry, come over here.
Crystal, you can take over.
No, I'm sorry. I'm going to move so that you can do the presentation here.
Are you sure?
Yes, I will move.
I just want you to be able to hear.
You will just have to advance your own slides.
Okay, I can do that.
Now we're baking.
All right, and then you can see who I am. I'm Carrie Siglerin from 5 County Association of Governments, the Care About Child Care there, and we're over 5 County and part of 6 counties, and we take over 10 counties. And we were really excited to get a lot of this money because we know a lot of our providers are from rural Utah, and a lot of times those rural Utah providers get overlooked. And some of them are out in La La Land, and we do a lot of traveling to get to them and meet their needs. So we were really excited about that. But one of the biggest things is to provide. Did you get it there?
Oh,
let me go back one.
Here, if you knew the instructions.
There we go. That's better.
Are you good?
Yeah. So the first thing that is a big issue in our area is keeping staff. They don't want to work, and you all are very, very aware of that. So what we wanted to do and what we have done is provided an OBM, which is a organizational behavior management specialist who we hired from the school district, and we snatched this guy, and we are so lucky to have him. He started working July, August, working with 4 centers a year and then monthly with their management teams all together to create personalized training plans for management team and staff to observe and to especially collect data, because we see that this can go statewide. We really see that this is important to go statewide. Some of his goals is to help the management team, and he's basically working with that management team, but he will go into the classrooms and do a lot of observations and teach them how to do observations, teach them how to get down and work with the children so that they can eventually train and teach their staff as they come in. So one of those goals is to increase that employee retention, decrease the stress in their work environment. He does do... He sends out things to their staff every month, and they come back with these answers, the same answers. So we want to see if he's making a difference in the work environment, and are they happy where they are? Are they less stressed? Do they feel that they're getting more training? Are they being supported? Then he's going to work with the administrators to define and create and implement strategies to reach their company goals. For example, one program he's working with, she's very new. She came from Family Child Care and opened up a large center and then opened up a second center. So she's very, very overwhelmed. And so she's just taking all of these things and just running with them. He's also going to design and implement employee retention strategies for increasing job satisfaction. And this comes from training, from his background. And especially training with children who have special needs, who have behavior issues, he can definitely help those teachers to work with those things. Questions on that? So the second thing that we're going to do, and we are collaborating with Southwest Technical College, and they are putting together 6 business management courses just for the managers of all of our centers in our area. In addition to that, once they finish that, then they're going to do 6 more that are more advanced extension. These are all for businesses, for business of family child care and centers. But it's based on rural areas. So they understand those rural areas and what's going on in our rural community. We've also worked with Southern Utah University, who is going to give us the CEUs for that, which is going to be awesome. And then access and support through their resource business centers. And this is still in process. We're hoping to get this up and running probably by the beginning of the year. So in our rural communities, and I'll take Kane County or Kanab, for example, there are no licensed child care there. I don't know what these poor people are doing, but there's no child care there. And we've tried and we've worked with several individuals to help us get that in there, and DWS and other agencies. And working with Fife County, that's been really helpful. So this year, we are basically offering more money to cost to help them become licensed, more technical assistance, more mentoring. We have been, we both worked through the Southwest Technical School and the Dixie State Business Center, which is definitely helping us there, because she, from that business center, she's from Kane County, so she practically knows everybody in Kane County, so that was just a huge, huge help for us. And then we're going to provide a $5,000 grant for materials and equipment, which will be divvied out through the year in order to help keep them there, help them understand how to use toys and equipment and materials and things like that. So cross your fingers. We're also going to provide Nature Explorer training. This is going to help with CCQS. So we will provide that class, which is going to give them that opportunity to work in their playgrounds and their yards in order to get that CCQS, those points for CCQS. And that will be in January. The other thing that we plan on doing is we've been researching tools to help our centers, especially with onboarding. A lot of our centers, they will come right out and they'll say, or even the staff will say, yeah, I was hired and thrown in a classroom, because they're so short-staffed. So we want to make sure that there's some really good tools out there for onboarding and helping them to understand not only the program, but also licensing standards and what is expected of you. What exactly is expected of you in your job? And here's your job description, and let us help you with that, along with some training for basic child care and child development. So we will research those. There's three of them that we're looking at right now. We will purchase that. Then we will train the managers and help them in their implementation of this. And then the last one is our staff professional development. We feel that our staff needs to have some professional development so that they can help improve the staff's ability to recruit and to help providers in our field. They want to be more effective. And so we've been searching for different types of professional development for them so that they can be more effective in what they are doing. Any questions?
There's a couple of comments, and then it looks like Holly has her hand raised.
So in case you're on the phone, I'll read the comment out loud, if that's okay.
That's great.
This is Jill from the Children's Center. We have families that pay extra to have a behavior aid in the classroom with their child, or EC programs pay to have extra staff in the class to support a child. And caregivers, while we work to find better ways to support this child, many people are... many children are expelled because care providers do not have enough resources. Maybe OCC provides funds to help with extra staff in classrooms experiencing children with challenging behaviors or extra needs. The question was, how do we explore this Nature Explore training?
We just contact Nature Explore, and the class, I believe, is about $50. What they are going to do is they are going to give it to us for $1,000 for 50 people. And so we will provide that in January, And then we will help them to work on their playgrounds and things like that. But as of right now, that'll be in our area, that $1,000 goes to 50 people. If we don't get 50 people to sign up, we'll open it up to the state.
Okay.
Next comment. This is a great idea, Jill. Use available funding to support something that is already in place to some degree. Then natureexplore.org, go to professional development. So instructions on how to find that on the website.
Okay, sorry. I raised my hand because I noticed in all of your presentation that it didn't say a lot about family child care. But then you did bring up the family child care. So I wanted to clarify, there are no family child care providers where you currently provide service? Like none at all, not even one?
No, we provide service to many, probably more family child care providers than we do center care.
Okay. Uh-huh. So are there any plans to help with the administration and different... kind of help those family child care providers
with the training
besides
and
the startup grant. Training and administration.
Those business classes are going to be written for family child care and center in mind, but mainly for those that are in rural Utah.
Great. Uh-huh. Okay.
Another comment. Can other centers participate in your Nature Explore training? I originally brought the class to Utah, and I know centers that would like to participate.
If we don't get 50 people in our training, then we will open it up to Utah. We'll open up to anybody else who wants to do it.
I love the behavior training.
We are so excited about that. That's our biggest thing. And
And we definitely need that.
He does some really hard conversations.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Okay,
thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Rebecca.
Okay, so now we're going to move on, and we're going to turn our time over to Kathy Randall, and she's going to share information about the stabilization grant.
Hello, I'm Kathy Randall. I'm the program manager of the stabilization grant. I think I introduced myself at the last meeting. And we're finally getting to the point where we're ready to issue these funds. So I'll just kind of go through the slides. I know there's a lot of questions. Some of this information is based on conversations with some members of the board, a family provider, just to get some ideas. So I just kind of want to go through the slides. So we, the Office of Child Care, will be releasing approximately $250 million in funds to the providers through the stabilization grant in December. Rebecca provided that funding stream so you can see the exact amount on that.
Can I make one clarification? On the slideshow, there was the total funding. We have taken out some of the funds to build our application and some staffing, and so not all $261 million are going in the grant, but
also to support the grant.
Yes, all to support the grant.
And eligible providers are licensed centers, licensed family home providers, DWS-approved license-exempt centers, DWS-approved exempt school-age programs, residential certificate providers, and DWS-approved out-of-school time programs. So those are the six eligible providers through license. Our funding formula is we're going to look at a base rate of $250 per child multiplied by your capacity, licensed capacity. So we're not looking at the enrollment, we're looking at the capacity
total capacity.
You understand? Licensed capacity.
Yes, yeah.
Licensed capacity of permit. And then if the program is open less than 21 hours a week, that grant amount will be reduced in half. Make sense? Any questions on that? And then there will be a minimum base rate of $250 for providers with a licensed capacity of 8. That means that that capacity of 8 is the lowest times that $250. There will be an enhancement available to providers that pay or will pay upon receipt of the stabilization grant, a minimum of $15 per hour for over half of their staff. And then that rate would bump up to $300 per child times a life.
Can I have something there with that enhanced rate? Just because we've received a couple of questions. We really wanted to provide an opportunity for providers to have flexibility in how they use these funds. We also have heard that the reasons why we chose the license capacity number is we've heard that because of the lack of workforce or availability to pay staff, that some classrooms aren't able to be opened or you aren't able to operate at your full capacity. So really with these grants, we really want to be able to stabilize but build the capacity or the ability to operate at your full capacity. With the enhanced payment rate, people have asked, are we required to pay a minimum wage for these grants? Not for the base amount. The base amount, we aren't looking at minimum wage because you can use those funds for a variety of reasons, which I think is the next slide. But if we do want to encourage providers to be able to increase their wages, and so the enhancement, we will look at you being able or requiring that you pay at least 50% or half of your staff, majority of your staff, a minimum of $15 an hour. We heard some feedback from providers. Because these are one-time funds, they wanted the ability to use some of this money to pay for one-time bonuses or for more one-time costs rather than raising everyone's wage up. And so I think this helps balance the ability to have flexibility, but also a financial incentive for encouraging providers to be able to raise their minimum wage for their staff. Sorry, thank you for your interject.
So the... allowable uses for these funds are personnel costs, which is salary, benefits, insurance, bonuses, and then rent or mortgage expense, utilities, maintenance or insurance, supplies, like goods and services to maintain the child care services, and then mental health services or support. And then the applications will be available through the Care About Child Care website, through the grants page.
Within your program.
Yeah, within your program.
Uh-huh.
And then just for some more information, there has to be an application for each program. So if you have multiple programs, you'll need to do an application for each.
There was one comment. There's a few.
I'll read the comment out loud and then okay. For everyone's benefit, they'll vote and then catch the answer. You scroll. Is that?
Yeah.
That's the top. I like that this is based on capacity, not enrollment. Does insurance mean health insurance for workers?
It means under the payroll or the personnel costs, it does mean health insurance or dental insurance, but then there's also the liability insurance that you can use it as well.
Where can we see a list of the grant uses?
I guess I don't understand that. Uses as in allowable expenses. We will have an FAQ available that will list all that, and then in the application we will have a more detailed description of what all of those entail.
Next question, how long will the stabilization grant cover expenses? Up to 9/30/23, or does it end earlier, paid monthly? What are the reporting requirements? So let's start first. how long will the grant cover the expenses?
So it will cover up to July of 2023. That's the last payment that will be issued because all of the funds have to be liquidated and used by September of 2023.
So it's a monthly.
It'll be a monthly payment.
Mm-hmm. Yep. That was the next question. And then what are the reporting requirements?
The reporting requirements are how you use
those expenses each month, how you spent the funds in those six areas. And then if you are also opting in for that enhancement based on the payroll, then the payroll verification.
Thank you. The FAQ and application is on the Care About Child Care website or OCC?
It will be on...
It will be on OCC. Our communications team is finalizing the draft, and that will be available shortly. We'll also link to Care About Child Care and vice versa. So, and then we'll want all of you guys to also communicate it through your websites and your networks as well.
And we will be sending an email blast out through the Care About Child Care with more information too.
You have one more slide.
Oh, yes. And so questions can be sent to this email, occstabilization@utah.gov. And my team is managing that. And so we'll be able to provide responses. This is also where we're gathering some of your FAQs to so that we get all that information out.
You have one more question. What if you have recently started a new business? Are you eligible to?
One of the federal requirements for this program is that you were licensed and regulated as of March 11, 2021. Did you want to talk about the?
Yeah, we've had some. I believe this question you're asking. We have had some questions about. With that requirement that you have to be licensed by a certain date, because these funds are really to stabilize the providers through the pandemic. We can use our other funds for new providers. But the question was, is if you are going to be acquiring a program that was licensed, after they were licensed on March 11th, but you are switching ownership or you're acquiring a new provider, without a break in service, are you still eligible to be able to access these funds? That is something that we are getting some clarification on, and we'll communicate a final answer, but we would like to be able to support that if we get that approval through our... we want to be compliant with the federal regulation, but also understand that that is a huge need right now, and so we want to be able to support that where we can.
Is there a...
I think
go up a little bit higher. If you have more funds than the applications will use, will retroactive costs be covered?
I think I responded to Kristen from our email earlier. We are still making that determination with our auditors and legal and finance to finalize that decision before that.
Yep.
We think that it is allowed or offered for the states to do that. We just are trying to get confirmation about that.
Great. Next question. Is there definitely enough in the stabilization grant to last until July 2023, or is there a possibility of money running out earlier?
We have the money to last until July of 2023.
Well, we projected that we believe the money will last through 2023, but depending on the number of applications that we get, the program is available while funding is available.
I guess definitely is not.
Yeah, don't say definitely.
Yeah. Any other questions?
Do you have any questions here in the room?
Thank you.
You know what? I do have a comment. Sorry. It's Jody Zabriskie. Thank you, Johnny. So, I'm hoping because I took over a center in May and the operations grant was simple. So, for that to cut off would make it pretty much. I shouldn't be running it because it loses money. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think that. So the availability for these funds to transfer with new ownership is critical and key. to your point, you wouldn't have been able to acquire a new center without the availability of those funds.
It would have went to a cookie factory, and we need childcare.
Yep. We want to make that happen with our policies. So.
That's just my comment, just to.
Well,
thank you.
So having said that, if for some reason legal decides that that's not allowable, it seems like the huge pot of other money that we still have could be utilized to then backfill that in the injunction fee.
Yeah, that's a good point, Elizabeth. Thank you.
Okay. Great discussion. So up next is Joellen.
Do we have Megan? Back up one, Rebecca.
Oh, I'm sorry, guys. It's really hard to operate your own laptop, guys. Joellen, you can have my seat.
I'm just going to come other side.
So I am just providing update for the child care quality system and what has happened since we've begun rating again. We do have programs that are rated again. So far as family child care, we've had 65 family providers apply for CCQS using the temporary framework. So that's where they can get a building quality or foundation of quality rating that's actually certified. And we've had 65 since. We observed 16, we did 16 observations. We observed 16 programs in September, and so 16 programs were rated. And their ratings just went into effect November 1st, their new rating. 13 of the 16 programs achieved a high quality rating. And actually, the 13, 11 are high quality. One is still high quality plus. They were high quality plus before the pandemic, and they still are. And we had a program that was high quality that moved to high quality plus. So they moved. I think that's great. 31 early childhood observations were completed. 97% of those observations achieved the high quality scores. So there were 12 FAPQA observations completed, and 86% achieved high quality scores. So of the 13 programs, of the three programs that did not get the high quality score, two programs did not get the high quality rating because they didn't get the required score in each of the classrooms. One other program did not get the quality score in one of the classrooms, but they also didn't have enough points. So there's a minimum amount of points the program has to get the rating of high quality or high quality plus. So they didn't meet that point requirement either. 19 programs received observations in October. 10 of them were high quality programs, and 9 were building quality programs. We're still finalizing observations, and we'll provide data regarding this group at our next meeting. It's very, very, very similar to September. I think the percentage, it appears with what we know so far, because we haven't tabulated points yet, and that's the tricky part. I know about observations, but the rating programs with points is a very arduous process to do by hand. And so that's why the computer will do it for us on the 20th. So, but with the high quality programs, a higher percentage if it goes with what I see on observation scores, a higher percentage of the high quality programs will remain high quality than they did in the first month. And we will have some programs that are currently building quality, as long as they get the required points, that have not been high quality, that will move to high quality. So I'll have much better data on that next time around, but actually from just the cursory looks I've done and comparisons I've done, I am so relieved to see that programs have not, for the most part, slid back. What we're seeing is that most programs have held either a score similar to what they had prior to the pandemic. So maybe it's still not a high quality score, but it doesn't show that the quality in a particular classroom has decreased or decreased by a lot. It's actually a really promising trend. So I'll be able to dig into the data a lot more over the next few months and really be able to bring better information to you next time. But in the work that I've done between even prior to the last meeting, I feel I just really have to say to the providers, wow, you guys, you've worked hard, and I think it's amazing what people have been able to do during the pandemic. It's really incredible. We have started observations for this month, where there are 16 programs that are scheduled to be observed in November, and we have begun observations in all of them. So that is where we're at. And does anybody have any questions? Johnny.
Kind of a selfish question. I know that you had mentioned, it's been mentioned that you're making some changes in how the training calendar has to work within a program that's being observed. Or maybe I just heard some scuttlebutt about that. Where you know, somebody signs on, if somebody is hired new, you know, that they don't have to get, like, all of the hours, you know, within the you know, the period of time, or maybe you're moving the center's look back period to a calendar year. Are you
talking about their documentation period?
Yes.
Okay. So the documentation period is dependent upon the month of their observation.
Okay.
So that's part of the reason that we notified programs much earlier. In the regular system, they know when their observations are going to be anyway. But because of the way it was, they didn't know. So we notified them in August and let them know.
So
if your observations are in the month of October, what that means is that all of your documentation has to be submitted to Care About Child Care by the end of October.
Yes. So you're kind of on a look back period of end of October, sort of like 1st of November the prior year to end of October.
Yes, that is correct.
And that would be the same for the management training component. The 10 That's hours that you have to...
For all of the components in the framework. It's based on that year.
Reason for my question was, with multiple centers seeking this in our company, I have to do like 5 hours every quarter to make sure that I cover it rather than just 10 hours. End up doing 20 hours. But that's fine. But that's how it works. Somebody told me that look back period was going to change and normalize for all programs, but that's not the case. Based on the observation.
It always is.
Yeah.
It always has been and always will. And I can say always will be, and that's not a good choice for it. You know, but as of right now, we do not anticipate that will be changing.
That's fair.
For now. Okay. Any other questions?
We have them in the chat.
Are you seeing programs that are short staffed or applying for CCQS, or is it only programs that are fully staffed? We're seeing the majority of the programs that were eligible applied at the time. We have been having some programs that have bowed out for different reasons. So, for example, one of the high-quality programs ended up withdrawing their application because their director gave her notice and was leaving. And so they decided to wait and re-enter after they had a new director oriented. I'd say this is a hard question for me to unequivocally respond to, but the trends we're seeing when we're out in most programs is that they have to move staff around, but they generally have staff. And I think part of what is helping programs right now is that they're not necessarily fully enrolled. Some parents still haven't brought their kids back. We have had to be a little bit more flexible in that, for example, the first month of September, we didn't have to push any of our observations. We were able to complete everything in the month of September. In the month of October, we did have a program that had COVID, so we needed to stay out of the program for 2 weeks. And so we did end up having to push one of their observations into the first week of November, but they will still be able to be rated because they're not actually scored until the 20th. So we are providing more flexibility right now to kind of deal with some of the COVID-related stuff, staffing-related stuff.
Sorry, Johnny, again, do the enhanced payments go along with that same calendar where it's different for
yes.
Okay, so it's not a calendar year enhanced payment.
No.
Okay, gotcha.
They look back on your last 12 months and it's an average.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I don't know that I would say programs are fully staffed. Many programs are not fully staffed. Are many programs getting by? Yeah, they're getting by. But I would never say it's easy right now. I wouldn't be the person to say that. It wasn't easy when it wasn't COVID. I used to do that for a lot of years. It wasn't easy then. So
it is way worse now.
Yeah. I do. I absolutely can see that it's worse. Yes.
And Holly.
Okay. Holly, you've got your hand up.
Are you ready for me?
Yes.
I'm not sure if this is coming up in your slides after, but do you have an update on what family child care, what our time frame is going to look like for our stuff? I'm assuming that it's coming later, right, Charlotte?
We anticipate, no, I don't have a slide on that, but thank you for reminding me. I can give you a response to that. We are accepting the temporary applications through December. And then we anticipate that right this week, I have 3 staff that are testing with ERSI as we speak. They're debriefing their 3rd observation for the week right now. And so that they'll be reliable again and can start training our observers. So between the period we need to get everybody trained and get the website ready, what we're projecting is that the application for the people that apply with the temporary framework will be available in March. So in January, it will open up to all the centers that didn't participate during this period. And in March, it will open to family child care. And it will be very similar to how we did the centers, where those that applied during this kind of early rating period will get the first bite of the apple, so to say. So they'll get randomized, they'll be told what their month will be, and they will be the first to get observation.
Okay, so we can apply potentially in March, mm-hmm. which means observations would start in July?
Yeah,
okay.
So the applications would be, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Great, yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. And it looks like Debbie has a question. Will you open up the portal to submit documentation for upcoming year? It's extremely hard to upload in just 2 months. I have to look at Heather to respond to that.
All documentation can be submitted at any time besides the family engagement. The family engagement opens up once you've submitted an application. But we can take a look at the family engagement piece. But any professional development or recognition or accreditation, all of the other documentation can be uploaded at any time.
Okay.
It looks like there's a comment back on the stimulation grant. Let's finish up the CCQS questions and comments, and then we can jump back to that one. Would that sequentially work, okay?
I don't know if there's any more.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Joellen, thanks for putting your note. I appreciate it.
So, did we want to go ahead and answer that?
Yeah. Kathy, you want to?
I guess I can answer.
Sorry, you're back there.
So the question is, back to the stabilization grant. The application is available on December 1st, but when are you expecting the first payments to go out? We are anticipating by January. You apply in December, then we'll have a period of time to be able to review and approve and determine eligibility, and the payments could go out in January. That changes, we'll let you know. A lot of it's unknown because we just don't know what the workload will look like and how many applications we'll get during the first part of December to review and approve.
Okay, so we're going to just move right on to Megan with the out-of-school program update.
Does that want me to do it?
Okay, so I'm not as exciting as everybody else. I just have a few things that I wanted to bring to the advisory team. Most of our grants for our out-of-school time programs are actually coming up to expire June of 2022, which means that we're opening up the way that we actually process our grants and how we actually create our grants for out-of-school time programs. We have been able to increase the amount of funding that we can give to our OST programs to about $9 million for the 2022-2023 year. And so what we're hoping to be able to do is to create a better process for our out-of-school time programs to be able to have access to that funding. Now that $9 million does include our TANF funding, so those are for our team programs, but that's about $2 million out of the $9 million that we would look at. So at this time, I have been meeting with different agencies, USBE, Utah After School Network, to kind of get a little bit of beginning feedback in regards to what our out-of-school time community actually needs and what they want from our grants. And I'm also inviting our advisory board. If anybody on the advisory board would like to have any sort of feedback on how we actually put together our grants for our out-of-school time programs, I would love for you guys to be able to be a part of that. If you have any interest in it, you are more than welcome to reach out to me via email. My last name is very hard to spell. If you want to find me, you can definitely reach out to Montana. She'll help guide you to me. But what I am considering doing is in the December timeframe, reaching out to current and prospective grantees to have a couple of feedback sessions with them to determine what their needs are and how we can build better grants to meet specific pockets of need versus having an overall grant that maybe just meets the needs of certain areas versus others. That's all I have for you guys. Any questions?
Thank you so much. Okay, so then we'll just move right on to Heather. Freshman development.
Hi, I'm Heather Thomas. I am the program manager for professional development, so I wanted to give you an update there. Let me advance the slide. So we've got a little delay going here. So we are launching our stimulus scholarships. The application for these, we regularly make updates to the website if we need to on Wednesdays, and we are actually updating our application to reflect these today in our update this evening. So that will be live this evening. So that's very exciting for our professional development team. These three new scholarships will be available. And we've talked about these before in this meeting. So we have the Early Education College Degree Payback Program, which is available for the eligibility is for those working at least 15 hours a week in a DWS eligible licensed program. There's some eligibility around what type of degree, but those related to early childhood, elementary ed, early childhood special ed, child development, and others that are equivalent to that. We also have our career ladder approved college course scholarship going up, which is if you're not in a degree program but you would like to take courses related to early childhood, you can, and you're taking those non-matriculated, you can receive up to $750 per course as a reimbursement for those courses as well. And then we have our conference registration scholarship, which would be for just for registration fees only, but up to $500 for one conference per year. And more information on that, on these, can be found at, on our scholarships webpage, which the link is down at the bottom. I also wanted to mention that we have our professional development incentive that we have increased each level. So every time you receive a level during this time on the career ladder, we've added a COVID-19 relief bonus to each level that you're earning during this time of $250 on top of our normal amounts for those professional development incentives. And we also have a grant that we are providing. We have a grant that we are providing along with the Utah Registry for Professional Development as well that will assist with the Domain 5, which is national accreditation for the child care quality system. It's a program accreditation reimbursement grant, so we are opening that up for up to $2,500 per program site if you would like to get reimbursed for those the cost of becoming nationally accredited. Those national accreditations that are included are those that are available that you can earn points for in the child care quality system, and that's also who it's open to. So it's open to those licensed centers and licensed family child care that can participate in the CCQS system. And then just a couple of other updates on professional development. We are continuing to offer our early ed U courses in collaboration with the Utah Education Network and Southern Utah University. We're able to offer online college courses in early childhood topic areas, and our application window is open right now through November 17th for the spring semester. And if you have questions on that or you need an application, please email earlyedu@utah.gov. Right now, the tuition is free for those courses, and there's a $63 transcription fee for Southern Utah University, but that could be submitted for reimbursement for our other scholarship, the Career Ladder Approved College course. So it's very affordable at this time. And then our just a quick curriculum update. We're finishing up the last few courses in the Environment Rating Skills Best Practice Series, along with the Care About Child Cares and the Quality Team, and are continuing to offer those through the Care About Child Cares. We are also finishing up and currently our partners are reviewing our revision of the Strong and Smart course, which is a level 2-3 course, a course that you can work use towards the demonstrated competency, like the CDA, for the physical and intellectual development subject area. So that one is coming as a revision soon. And then we're also starting work on another level 2-3 course, revising it, the professionalism in child care course. So we have lots of new things coming soon. Any questions?
Heather, do you have any flyers? I'm not seeing any flyers on the website. Do you have any flyers for all the scholarships?
Yes. We're working on getting all those up onto the website. And then additionally, we're going to send out an email blast next week that has some of that information as well to all the programs and caregivers and teachers that are eligible, so that you'll get some more information there.
then I see, can the early education college degree payback program be used for a master's degree? Yes, as long as it meets the requirements for the type of degree for the career ladder, then it, you could also use it for a master's degree. And if you have questions about what qualifies, you can email URPD. They're the ones that are working with us to administer this scholarship. So it's urpd@usu.edu.
So Katie?
Heather? Yeah, this is Katie Triggered. So going back to the accreditation grants, which are awesome, if a center wants to obtain more than one accreditation, can the scholarship funds be used for more than that as long as they don't exceed the 2,500, or is it limited to one type of accreditation?
That's a good question. I am not positive off the top of my head. I would say one per program site. But I will take that back and make sure that that's clear in our application that's on the website.
Thank you.
Okay, so now we're going to move on to our agency updates. And it looks like we have Simone a little bit next on the list. Let's see if Simone has anything to share with us.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Thank you. I just want to thank every one of the providers of reports that have been heard right now about quality not going down. I have to support that. We have not seen providers doing less during this time. We have seen providers doing more and trying their best to stay afloat. They are all having trouble with hiring individuals, but we're working together to come up with ways to help them. It is important for us, licensing and the childcare community, to be aware of what's going on with the legislative decisions and things that may impact in a negative way what we're doing in childcare and all of the efforts that we have made to provide quality care in the state. So please be knowledgeable about what's happening and take an active position so we don't go backwards instead of moving forward with the quality that we have achieved in Utah. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Does anybody have any questions for Simone? No? Great. So we're going to move on. Next, it would have been Jared with USBE. He's not here. They're in the midst of doing the training that we heard about. But Rebecca has stepped up to the plate, and will give his little report.
Yes, so Jared provided me with some talking points, and so I'm just going to read them verbatim, if that's fair with me. What Jared wanted this group to know is that the dates are set for the 2022 USBE preschool workshops. They'll hold four workshop sessions, January 28th in Price, February 11th will be a virtual workshop, February 18th in Brigham City, and February 25th in Salt Lake City. To register for the workshops, participants can visit the website, is it included?
Yeah,
on the slide. Thank you. To sign up for whichever workshop session you would like to attend. And then, the next slide for an update. He says USBE has launched two asynchronous professional learning Canvas courses. First, the Standards Implementation Canvas courses. They provide an overview of the Utah Early Childhood Course Standards, lesson planning, and each of the eight content areas in the course standards. And then the second, the bite-sized professional learning. It's a continuously growing set of professional learning courses relating to elements of preschool quality and instructional supports for preschool educators. If you have questions about these courses, Jared asks that you reach out to him directly and has included his email on the slide. And then his final update, he says that the dates are set for the 2022 USBE preschool workshops. Looks like
Is this the same? Yeah. Is this just a flyer for the workshop?
Yeah.
Okay. His talking points are the identical under both slides, so sorry guys. I'll spare you the, I'll spare you having listened if you read that twice. So here's information. There's some contact information for Chelsea and for Jared on these slides. You can reach out to them directly.
Thank you. Okay, wonderful. That kind of brings us to other business and to see if there's anything that anybody has to bring up right now, would like to share. Oh, Holly has raised her hand.
Sorry, I came prepared. I had a question for Simone, but it wasn't anything that he was going over, so I wanted to save it till the end. I've been working with some legislation that's coming up. Yay, the new legislative session. I'm wondering if there's any way that we could get, I know that I can go onto the Care About Child Care website to get names and kind of the general areas of where different providers are so that we can help family child care providers reach out to their elected officials, because there's some proposed legislation that could be potentially helpful to family child care providers. My question to Simone is there any faster way to get a list of the family child care providers in the state, maybe just a name, a number, and a general area, so that the Professional Family Child Care Association can help connect them with their representatives to help give our point of view on some of the legislation that would be coming up?
Hi, Holly. Well, most of our home providers' contact information is private. So we don't normally share that, especially because, well, it is for other reasons than for child care. I know that the legislation that is coming up, some of it is going to help them, some of it is not, and is applicable to them. But again, their home address and phone numbers are private to us, so we don't share them.
Okay. Yeah, I realized that I could use the Care About Child Care website, and that just gives a name and number and kind of a general idea, but I would have to go through every single, like, pretend like I'm a parent and trying to find care. I just was wondering if there's any way to do that more effectively, but if there's, I did realize that I didn't know if licensing was even able to give out any of that information.
Yeah, well, we are able to give it to your association, but not for that purpose, and we cannot send the email from us for that purpose, because we cannot lobby for anything. I hope that's clear. But yes, you could use the information posted on our public site. If there is any information there or in Care About Child Care, every piece of information that is posted there is public. But again, it's not that any provider's contact information is not secret. If I can explain that, it's not secret, but we protect it, so there is no other companies in a shower of propaganda getting to their houses, because they want, even though they're businesses, they want to keep the privacy of their homes.
We appreciate that very much. So that sounds good. We'll just kick at it the old-fashioned way.
Thank you. Some comments? Let's see. Please give an update.
This is Katie. Can I just share the 47th Annual Utah Early Childhood Conference on March 4th and 5th? Registration for that should be opening by the end of November. And so if you're on our list, you'll get an email about that. And if you're not on our list and want to be, just let me know.
Okay. Thanks, Katie. So, okay, from Kristen, please give an update on the changes to the process for U.S. citizen children living with undocumented immigrant parents who apply for the child care system.
Would you like me to give an update?
Please.
I can do that. So we have made in October a policy change to for verifying work eligibility. Prior to October, we were utilizing a SAFE system, and we discontinued that. So our policy update has included, or has removed SAFE from that, and then
there's information there about how, what we are looking at for verification to determine that a parent is meeting the work requirement. There was also an administrative rule that was posted, and there's a public comment period changing some of the administrative rule around this piece of policy, or around this, this piece of policy. That public comment period ended on November 1st, and so our office is right now working with our legal team that prepares the public or the administrative rules and reviewing the comments that we received and determining the next steps. So that's the update for that piece. Oh, sorry. I'm sorry, I don't have a mask. Okay.
Where can we sign up for the USBE preschool workshop? It is in our flyer.
I can read the address to you. It's on the slide. But Jared also provided a website, usbe.midasedition.com. Or you can reach out to Jared Lisenby, and his email address is jared.lisenby@schools.utah.gov.
Thank you. What is the website for the Early Education College Degree Payback Program?
And then Charlotte
Hanford puts
the link there.
Charlotte Hanford, you're on the phone, jobs.utah.gov, and then /URPD/scholarships. Again, go to our website and also childcare, URPD, and it's pretty intuitive to get there.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then the minutes for this, when do you post the minutes? When did the minutes get posted for our meeting?
The drafted minute should be posted within 2 weeks.
Within 2 weeks on our website, the OCC website.
Then, Katie, I don't know if you saw, it looks like you have some comments for being added to your list. And so, Katie, I think you have access to the comments. You can see that contact information.
Yes, I do. Thank you.
Yep, there's a few of them. And then I would love to connect with Holly, who commented a few minutes ago. Is there any way I can get your contact information? There you go. Thanks. Looks like Holly did that.
Public meeting comments are a whole new world in this virtual world.
This is really quite interesting, actually.
Yeah.
Just ask her.
I think that's all.
Okay, Holly's entering, so that's nice. I think that's all. Is there? We have some time for some public comments, if there's any. So we'll give it a minute, and if not, we're out of here early today.
Ask for motion to adjourn.
I know. I'm excited. I'm like, I'm kind of going, what am I going to do with 25 minutes? Do I have a motion to adjourn? Thank you. We have a second?
Second.
All right. We're adjourned. We'll see you in 2 months. Happy New Year. Happy Thanksgiving. All of that stuff.
Happy everything.
Thank you. Oh, not much.
Yeah,
I should have put